on dealing with anxiety, because I know none of you have suffered any anxiety recently. What happened is when I was working on the sermon, I noticed that the very first line of the passage I was going to use said, because of this, and then Jesus goes into some dialogue on anxiety, and I realized that you can't really preach the text on anxiety without preaching the text that comes before it, or then it loses all its context. So this morning, we're going to be starting, this is probably going to be a two-week thing, Matthew chapter 6, verses 16 through 24, and this is going to kind of lead into our message next week that is more directed on anxiety. So this morning, we're going to start here. Jesus, this is still the Sermon on the Mount. We used a passage from chapter 5 last week, and so this week we're going to be looking at a passage from Matthew chapter 6. Jesus says, whenever you fast, do not put on a gloomy face as the hypocrites do, for they neglect their appearance so that they will be noticed by men when they are fasting. All right, how many of you have ever fasted? Now, I'm not talking about a diet. I'm actually talking about a fast. Okay. How long did you fast? One day. One day? Anybody ever fast longer than a day? Jenny, how long did you fast? How many? Two? Do I hear three? No. Okay. I want you to think, and don't say any names, especially because we're live. But I want you to think of somebody that you know that anytime they do something, they always have to over-exaggerate the effort so that everybody knows how hard it was. You see these people sometimes, you go, how are you doing? I'm just exhausted. Oh my, why? Well, I had to do this. And it's like, really? And that exhausted you? Oh, yes. And it really makes the effort sound harder. And we like it when the effort sounds hard, because when the effort sounds hard, we feel like there should be some sort of recognition or reward for the effort. As Bill Murray says in Caddyshack, how about a little something, you know, for the effort? We want something for the effort, okay? And so Jesus is talking about the Pharisees. He says the Pharisees are these people that anytime they fast, they purposely go out into public and they make themselves look awful. Now, how could you make yourself look awful if you're a Pharisee? Now, I've already seen some of the people in here look at each other going, well, I just wouldn't put makeup on. Or I'd put the wrong makeup on. But if you're a Pharisee, assuming that Pharisees didn't wear a lot of makeup, how would a Pharisee make himself look bad going into public? Okay, facial expression. And you know how this works. You put on the facial expression that makes it look like your life is about to end. You know, any of you know people that sigh a lot? I always think of... the Pharisee, whenever I read this passage, I always picture a Pharisee looking like Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh. You know, it's not much of a tail, but it's all I have. You know, that kind of thing. Okay, so facial expression. How else could you do? What else could you do to make yourself look haggard or miserable in the crowd of people? What? Okay, well, there's always that hygiene thing. We're not going to bathe. I'm not going to fix, and this is an issue some of us don't have anymore, not going to fix the hair. So I'm going to let the hair look a little unkempt. I'm not going to bathe, you know. And so I'm going to look rough. I'm going to make myself purposely look like I'm suffering. And so Jesus says, whenever you fast, don't put on the gloomy faces the hypocrites do, for they neglect their appearance. He said they purposely neglect their appearance, so that they will be noticed by men when they're fasting. So in other words, the Pharisees are going out into public and they want everyone to know that they're fasting. Now, if you're a Pharisee, why would you want people to know you're fasting? Because it makes you look spiritual, right? It makes you look spiritual. Any of you ever known somebody who liked to make themselves look more spiritual than they were? I won't go into any specifics, but I have encountered people like that before. And it's like, you know, it's like those people that have to tell you before everything they do that the Lord led them to do it. What? Why are you getting up and leaving? Because the Lord's leading me to do that. Well, why do you need to tell me that? Because you need to know that I'm being led by the Lord. Because if you don't know that, then it looks like I'm just doing random things. So sometimes it's really important. We want people to know we're really, really spiritual. How many of you have ever noticed that you pray in public differently than you pray at home? Any of you ever noticed you do that? Any of you ever wondered why you do that? When I was in college, I had a friend. Anytime he prayed in chapel, he prayed in Old English. But when he prayed in the dorm, he prayed in more vernacular. It was kind of like this. Hey, God, it's me. That's how he would start a prayer in the dorm. But if he was in chapel, Dear Heavenly Father, we beseech. He would use the word beseech. We beseech thine presence. And it's like, now, if you ask him why he prayed differently in chapel and in the dorm, you know what he'd tell you? He didn't even realize it. He didn't realize it. We sometimes program ourselves when we're in public to pray a certain way or to act a certain way because we want to sound spiritual. It may not be why we do it, but it's just what we've always seen, right? We've always witnessed in church. Most people pray in Old English, right? King James prayer. I got an NIV Bible, but I pray in King James. And that's because that's what we've seen our whole life. We've watched people do that. And so there is something in us that kind of, we understand this concept of how it's very easy to slip into this, is that we want people to know. We want people to know we're being spiritual. And so the Pharisees were masters of this. And so Jesus says, look, don't go out and do this. He says, whenever you fast, don't put on the gloomy face and neglect your appearance. In fact, Jesus says, when you fast, verse 17, anoint your head and wash your face so that your fasting will not be noticed by men, but by the Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. So we've got this circumstance set up where Jesus says you've got Pharisees and they're going out and they're doing these things to be noticed. And he says, that's not the purpose of fasting. So let me ask you a question. What's the purpose of fasting? Does anybody know what the purpose of fasting was? Right. It is the purpose is to kind of set yourself apart from physical needs and focus on spiritual stuff. To the exclusion of even, in some cases, depending on the length, food and water. Now, not always water, depending on the time frame, but specifically food. And so you would do this as a means of sacrifice. And by the way, Jesus did this. Jesus fasted. I mean, it was a fairly common thing in the New Testament period. But this idea of the fast was meant to kind of separate yourself from those things and make some sacrificial things as you entered into a time of focus and prayer with God. Okay? So the Pharisees would do this. They would want people to know it because they wanted people to think that they were spiritual. Now, if you ask a Pharisee why they would do that, what do you suppose a Pharisee would tell you? Why would they want everybody to know they were spiritual? Why do you think a Pharisee would say that they were doing that? Well, it's an expectation. Well, we are supposed to be spiritual leaders, right? And if we want you to fast, what do you need to see? You need to see us fasting. But how can you see us fasting if we look like everybody else, right? If you can't tell we're fasting, Nobody's going to know we're fasting. And so their explanation probably would have been, we're trying to set an example. We're trying to really, really be good leaders of spiritual behavior. And so you see us doing these things, you know to do it. It's funny because when Jesus addressed the Pharisees, you remember him using this term. He says, woe to you Pharisees, you are whitewashed tombs. You remember that term? What does he mean by that? You look good on the outside, but on the inside, you're full of decay. He says, your spirituality is all external. It's all external. It's for show. How many of you have ever gotten a hold of something that looked really good, and you bit into it, and it was not? Any of you ever, has that ever happened to anybody? Any of you ever grabbed the milk carton, poured you a little bit of milk, and it looked good? You threw it back, and you're like, yeah, that's not good. That is not good at all. The issue that Jesus is trying to address here is that there is essentially, there are two types of spirituality. There is the external spirituality, which is meant for other people. It is meant to give people the illusion that we are really spiritual people. And so we put these things out there and we do these things and we say these things. I've got a friend who told me that there's a friend he hangs out with. The guy doesn't go to church, but anytime they eat in public, he always prays in public. He said, but if you eat with him at his house, he never prays at the meal. He said, why do you pray in public? He said, oh, I don't know. He always prays in a restaurant, but he never prays at home. It's that thing where it's like we want people to see a certain thing, and we don't even realize we're doing it sometimes. My wife used to pick on me. She used to say that she could tell who I was talking to on the phone by how I was talking. Joey's nodding. Do you do that too? You've seen it. Have you seen it? If I'm talking to somebody from the country, like if I'm talking to somebody in Washington County, I start talking more like a country person because I still have that in my repertoire. If I'm talking to somebody that I work with at Pitt, I sound different. I talk differently. And she was really good at it. She could tell there were certain people. Every time I was talking to them, she's like, I know who you're talking to. And it was the way I inflected my voice. It was just and it was very subconscious. I never realized I did it until she told me I did it. And then once she told me, I became self-conscious about it, and I notice it every time now. And it's really creepy. It's a subconscious thing. All right. So Jesus, in addressing these people, now some of you are going, I don't understand what this has to do with anxiety. We're getting there. So Jesus says, look, don't be like the Pharisees with this external stuff. So here's what I want you to do. When you're fasting, I want you to anoint your head with oil, okay? I want you to clean yourself so that when you're in public, no one knows you're fasting. Now, why does no one need to know that you're fasting? Because the fast isn't for those people. When you're fasting, the fast is between who? It's between you and God, okay? It's between you and God. Totally, totally separate thing. Totally separate thing. He says, this is between you and God. So when you're fasting, this is between you and him. Nobody else even needs to know what's going on. And if somebody says, you know, well, why wouldn't you want other people to know? It's because the purpose of fasting is not to draw attention to yourself and to how spiritual you are. It is supposed to be a time of communion with God in a very special way. In a very special way. And so Jesus here is telling these people, he says, look, don't get focused, don't get tied up and connected to how other people. Now, you have to put some balance here because obviously as Christians, we're supposed to be witnesses, right? Okay, so there has to be some balance here. But Jesus is telling these people not to not be witnesses, but he says, look, when it comes to the spiritual things between you and God, they need to stay between you and God. Any of you remember the Apostle Paul talking about going home and praying in your closet? You remember that? It's the same concept. Why did Paul say go home and pray in your closet? Because he said there are some things that are between you and God. You don't need to do that in front of other people. There are certain times when you lead people in prayer or you pray in front of people to set an example, but there are certain types of prayer that need to be private and personal with God and need to be done in your closet at home, not where everybody can see. So there always has to be balance in these things, all right? So Jesus says, look, don't do like the Pharisees. You're not doing this to be noticed by men. Now, verse 19, Jesus says, as we segue out of this kind of token spirituality to connect to people, Jesus says this, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. All right, so let's take a moment and look at this concept. Jesus segues from spirituality for the purpose of people on earth seeing it, and then he segues into don't store up for yourself treasures on earth, but store up treasures in heaven. Now, why the segue there? What is the connection between those things? You've got Jesus talking about this spirituality that is for the benefit of other people. How many of you have ever tried to fool a significant number of people for some reason? Any of you ever tried to fool anybody? No one in here has ever tried to fool anybody? Doug, you got us the other night. I don't want to let the cat out of the bag, so to speak. Sorry, Jenny. The other night, Doug played a joke on us at praise team practice. He has this this little thing that sticks on the back of a chair or something, and it meows. And so he, during praise team practice, he slaps that thing on something. I don't know where he put it. But all of a sudden, during praise team practice, you hear, meow. And so we're all like, is there a cat in here? And so at some point, you know, Ken is in the back room looking for the cat, and Jenny, who's a cat lover, goes home and she's all upset because she thinks there's a cat trapped in the church. And I'm going, there's no way a cat got in the church. It's a brick building. Cats can't crawl through brick. At least most of your normal cats can't. And then Jenny decided it must be a cat bird. It's a bird outside making cat sounds, which is a whole other fantastic story. And so when it was all over, Doug sends me a Facebook message, goes, it shows me a thing, and it's like, gotcha. And then he goes, don't tell anybody. But then he finally told everybody, and it was pretty funny, though. I have to admit, it was pretty funny. I really want one of those. Huh? Days later. It was a couple days later, as Jenny had multiple sleepless nights worried about the cat that was trapped in the church. When you're trying to fool people, it's kind of funny. I used to have this thing at home. I could fool anybody in the world, but I couldn't fool Mom. Therefore, the attempt to fool anyone was pointless. Because if you couldn't fool Mom, you still got in trouble. I want you to take note of how Jesus brings this into a concept of physical things. He says, look, you don't need to store up stuff for yourself on earth, and one of the things you don't need to store up is the praise of men. He says, look, if you spend your life convincing everyone in your church, and just take a minute and think about this. If you were able to convince everybody in this room or all of the fantastic people watching online this morning, if you were able to convince all of them that you were the most spiritual dude in the world, that is a spirit-filled guy right there. Man, That Jamie Fulford. That is a spirit-filled dude right there. What? I mean, Jamie Fulford. Spirit-filled man right there. And if Jamie could, and some of you are going, I'm not convinced. But if Jamie could convince everybody in this room that, man, he is a super spirit-filled guy, and then maybe in a few years he gets to be president of CCYC or some big thing, and he goes to that, and there are 1,000 people there, and he gets up and prays, and all of a sudden, then everybody goes home and goes, man, that Jamie Fulford, that is a spiritual cat right there, man. That dude, that's a spirit-led dude, man. He's amazing. If you could convince everybody that you were the most spiritual person in the world, and then one day you stood before God and he goes, you weren't fooling me. You didn't fool me. I know what you are. I know who you are. I know the number of hairs on your head. I was there when you were created in your mother's womb. I knew you before you were known by breath. I know everything about you. You've never fooled me. You fooled everybody else. But you haven't fooled me. Yeah, you've always said good prayers, and you always, when you were in public, you know, you walked around and carried a Bible to let everybody know. And man, you just always did all the right things and said the right things and put on the right persona. And man, everybody fell for it except the judge. And then you think about that verse that says, what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world? Finish it for me. And loses his soul. So Jesus here, as he is kind of giving this rebuke to the Pharisees at the Sermon on the Mount, and he's telling all these people, and most of these people are poor. So he's telling these people, these poor people that are sitting there, that are gathered there, that are listening to him talk, and usually all they've got is the Pharisees. But now Jesus has come and he says, look, guys, don't be like the Pharisees. And if that's what you've always heard, you're like, don't be like the Pharisees. I thought we were supposed to be like the Pharisees. I thought we were supposed to emulate the Pharisees. I mean, that's what they always tell us. Act like us. Do what we do. Jesus says, no, don't be like them. Their spirituality is fake. They're doing it for a show. They're putting on a show that they're trying to let you know how spiritual they are. Don't be like that. The goal is never to make other people think you're spiritual. The goal is to make who believe you're spiritual? God. And if God isn't sold, if he doesn't buy it, if he's like, yeah, you're a faker. You're a faker, and you're a really good faker. You fool all those people, man. You've got all these people. They've bought in, man. They believe it. Hook, line, and sinker, you've sold them. Man, every time that song came on, you had that hand up, baby. Had that hand up, because that's it. Nothing says I'm spiritual like getting your hands up when you're singing. And when you prayed, man, you always had a good prayer. It was always long, and it used a lot of impressive words, like beseech, you know, and you prayed in Old English, and you were really good at it, and you did that really well, and you frequently let people know that the Lord was leading you to do things, and you weren't just doing them because they were random, but, you know, I feel like the Lord is leading me to do this, and you used all the right terminology, and you did all the right signals, and you did all that stuff. And God says, but I know you. And I know you didn't. You never loved me. You loved the attention. You loved the perception that you loved me. You loved the idea that other people thought that you loved, but you never loved me. Everything was always about making other people think you were spiritual. And so Jesus is warning them about that. He says, look, don't store up your treasures on earth. Now, I think a lot of times when we read this text, because we kind of separate verse 19 from verses 16, 17, and 18, we read this and go, oh, okay, I know what this is about. He's talking about people storing up money. And certainly that is part of it, because the Pharisees were prosperity gospel people. I mean, they were always like that. But this is not just about finances. That is an element of it, and I think you have to acknowledge that element of it. But this is not just about money. By the way, do any of you believe that when Jesus says, don't store up for yourself treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal, do any of you think that means Jesus wants everyone in this room to live paycheck to paycheck? You think Jesus means don't keep stuff to leave to your family, don't have a retirement plan, don't have a bank account, you should just live paycheck to paycheck. I don't know that that's what Jesus is teaching here. I don't think that's what it is. So the context becomes important. He's talking about spiritual stuff, and yes, there is an economic element to this, but remember, why would you lecture a bunch of poor people? Because remember, most of the people at the Sermon on the Mount are dirt poor. So why would you have to warn those people about, don't you get rich? And they're all going, I don't think that's going to be a problem, sir. So I don't want to go too far in disconnecting the financial aspect, because there clearly is an application there. But I think what is really more important to understand today is that when Jesus talks about treasures on earth versus treasures in heaven, I think where he's really going with this to these poor people that are listening is, don't tie all your spiritual accolades here. You better have some with me. I went to a funeral one time, and I listened to people talk about how great this guy was who died. And then they just went on and on. Man, this is a great guy. And at one point, I looked at the guy next to me and I said, are we at the right place? Because this guy was a jerk. Any of you ever been to a funeral with somebody that wasn't a very nice person? You listened to everybody talk good about him, you thought, who are they talking about? None of you have ever been to that funeral. Okay, all right. So I finally got somebody go, yeah. Nobody wants to admit they were at that funeral, but we all have been to that funeral. But that person that really wasn't that nice, but you don't, I mean, let's be honest. You don't go to a funeral and say, well, let's just go ahead and let's call it like it is. We're all glad this guy's gone. I mean, you're not going to do that at a funeral. And trust me, as a minister, the hardest thing in the world you'll ever be asked to do is do the funeral with somebody that's not very nice. Mo, why are you laughing? Guys, I just call it like I see it. We're all kind of glad this day finally came. No, I mean, but we have been there, okay? Jesus says you don't want to be that person that when everybody comes to your funeral and they talk about what a great spiritual guy you were, and God's going, who are they talking about? They didn't know this guy at all. We do not want the greatest elements and statements about our spirituality to be stated at our funeral. Where do you want to hear those things most importantly? On Judgment Day, when you stand before God and he's like, now you got it. You really did love me, and you really served me. And a lot of times you did it quietly, and you did it behind the scenes, and you didn't always make a spectacle about it. Yet everybody that knew you knew that you were a good person. But you didn't make a show every time you did something in my name. And I love you for that. And I love the fact that you were more interested in scoring points with me than you were people on earth. And yes, there's balance here. Again, it's really important to understand as disciples, we're supposed to be good witnesses. But here's the problem. If the witness is hollow and empty, don't we usually figure that out? We see stories all the time. And this is becoming you want a pandemic? In the last 2 years, the number of these megachurch ministers who have fallen from grace, and it's like, oh, they found out this person. And I don't know if any of you saw this, but during the pandemic, there were two different megachurch ministers who committed suicide. They killed themselves. And one of the guys, as all this was unfolding, what started coming out was he was having major problems with depression, and there was some sin going on, and he didn't know how to deal with it. And everybody's like, we didn't know. Nobody knew. This guy had a mega church. Nobody knew. And it was killing him. Because he had invested so much time in fooling the masses, but yet inside of him there was decay and he couldn't address it. And so Jesus gives a really, really important warning here about this. He says, look, don't store up for yourself these treasures on earth, these accolades and these spiritual treasures. He said that stuff goes away. He says where you really need to be storing this stuff up is in heaven. Now in verse 22, he kind of concludes this section. He says, look, the eye is the lamp of the body. So then if your eye is clear, your whole body will be full of light. And you think of that like a window. If you've ever been in a room and there's no electricity, no light in there, and the window, if the window was really clean, you'd have a lot of light coming through that window. But if the window's cloudy or dirty, then you don't get as much light. And he says, the eye is the lamp of the body. So if the eye is clear, the whole body will be full of light. But if the eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. All right. Next verse, please. He says, if then the light that is in you is darkness. Now, that's an interesting term, right? If the light that's in you is actually darkness, how great is that darkness? And then he says this, and this is such a fascinating thing. And this is the last verse before he segues into what we'll look at next week on anxiety. He says, no one can serve two masters. For either he'll hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. And here he uses the term wealth or mammon if you look at it in the Greek. So here's this interesting thing. As we've moved through this whole section, Jesus kind of concludes with this. He says, you can't serve two masters. Now, what does he mean by that? Well, there's a couple applications that I'd like to touch on this morning before we move into our time of communion. Here's the first one. It is becoming increasingly difficult to be pleasing to God and pleasing to the world. It's never been easy, but in today's culture, it is harder than ever. And I have watched over the last several weeks, I have watched individual after individual after individual just put their foot right in their mouth trying to say something profound or good. They either go too far one direction and church people get mad because like, well, that's not what Jesus was saying. Or they go too far the other way and they say something profoundly spiritual, and then people online who are socially oriented are like, well, you just don't like this group of people. And it's hard to find balance where there is no balance. And Jesus told us this 2,000 years ago. He said, guys, look, here's the problem. You can't make everybody happy. You can't make everybody happy. Any of you ever been in a work situation where you had two bosses? It was the funniest thing. A couple summers ago, I had a junior counselor. And I don't remember the order it happened. I just remember that Jason was dorm dad, and I was the dean. And Jason told the junior counselor to do something, which was fine. That's Jason's job. Well, a few minutes later, I'm walking through camp, and I see this kid, and I go, hey, come here. I need you to go do something. And he goes, I said, go do this. He goes, okay. Now, he didn't tell me he was on a mission for Jason. And he didn't go back until Jason, he was on a mission for me. So guess what? How do you suppose this ended? Well, because he stayed in the dorm, this tells you, by the way, how the pecking order works. He did what Jason told him to do. Which was, so when I saw him, I said, didn't I tell you to do this? He goes, yes, sir. I said, well, why didn't you do it? And then Jason goes, oh, Stuart, I had him doing this. So I looked at the kid and said, why didn't you tell me that? You know, I was like, well, why didn't you tell me? Now, here's the thing. The reason he didn't tell me is in his head, he wanted to make both of us happy because he wanted to do a good job. And so he wanted both of us to be happy. The problem was we both had a time frame we wanted this thing done in, and he didn't have enough time. So at the end of it, he made Jason happy. Actually made Jason doubly happy because he did what Jason said, and then he did what Jason said of doing what I told him. But he made me mad. And I was like, he goes, I didn't know what to do. Well, any of you ever found yourself in that situation where you're like, well, the scripture says this and the world says this, and I don't want to make those people mad, but I don't want to do something wrong against God. I don't know what to do. Well, Jesus told us 2,000 years ago, that's what it means to be a disciple. You got to choose a side. Sometimes we don't want to choose a side, right? We all want to be Switzerland. We all just want to, we don't want to offend anybody. We don't want to choose a side. We just want to, look, I just want to live. I don't want to upset nobody. I ain't trying to make nobody mad. I want to do my thing in peace. And sometimes we don't have that option. So Jesus says, look, you can't serve two masters. From a spiritual standpoint, you can't always look spiritual to the crowd and look spiritual to God. Now, you would think that you can do both at the same time, but sometimes you can't. Sometimes you can't. And he says, you need to choose. And really, what this comes down to is what we're going to see next week is a lot of the anxiety we deal with is because we haven't made a choice. We haven't made a choice. And when we get caught in the middle and we can't really decide where our priorities lie and we can't really decide what's really important to us and we haven't really made a decision, this is what matters to me. We feel pulled in multiple positions and pulled in different directions and we can't figure out where our time should be focused and where it should be spent and we just feel pulled in 1,000 directions and that creates anxiety. And Jesus says, look, here's the precursor to how I'm going to address anxiety. You need to figure out who you serve. You need to figure out who the boss is. You need to figure out where your allegiances lie. He said, guys, it's really important you understand. You can't have two masters. You can't have two masters. He says, no one can. No one can. So from that standpoint, we got the spiritual aspect of this. Now the financial part, the other part, Jesus is kind of tying these things together. He says you can't serve God and wealth. Now again, he's talking to a significant number of poor people, but really what we're talking about here is the physical and the spiritual, because those things collide sometimes. And we have to make choices. We have to make choices about where our priorities lie. Any of you ever baked something and put the ingredients in the wrong order? Linda, you're a cook. I know that. Does it matter if you put stuff in the wrong order?
Yes.
Why?
Doesn't
turn out the way. And you're like, well, I put all the right stuff in there.
My niece used to do that when she lived with us.
Just
throw it all in.
All right, thing of salt, some butter in there. And yeah, for some reason, it does matter the order and when you put stuff in. And if you don't pay attention to that, you'll get in trouble. The directions do matter. Think about this. If you took all the ingredients of a house and put them in the wrong place. Like if the cement, instead of being your foundation, was your roof. Jimmy likes that. That could be a bad situation. The walls buckle and that thing falls in on your head. Jesus says, look, it's important for you to understand that priorities and the things that you prioritize do matter. It's not enough to have God as a part of your life and work as a part of your life and recreation as a part of your life. And he says, look, you can have all those things. All the pieces can be there, but you got to cook them in the right order. And what always has to be number one? Well, God says, I got to be number one, because if I'm not number one, the recipe won't work. You can't just throw me in like I'm the icing. That's not how this works. And so this thing that he's trying to communicate to people is that, look, you can't serve God and the physical world, whether that's money or whatever it is. He says, you've got to prioritize how this stuff works. And if you put me in the right order, if you put me number one, you can still have all the other things, but I got to be first, or it doesn't work. And so this morning, as we get ready to move into our time of communion, and that's really a time where we go back and kind of look at how we prioritize things. And if the praise team will come up, get ready to lead us in that communion hymn. As we look at that time where we kind of come in and we kind of reaffirm our relationship with God and where He is, we come to this inescapable question that we all have to ask. Where does God fit in this thing for me? If I can only serve one master, who is my master today? Is my master Jesus? Or has work become my master? Or has my family become my master? Has my career, has my hobby? What is calling the shots in my life? And so Jesus uses all this as a precursor to say, I want to talk to you guys about anxiety. And so next week we're going to talk about anxiety. But this morning, my challenge to you as we move into a time of communion is that you really take some time to take stock of where your allegiances lie. If you can only serve one master today, who is your master?